Joe Earth and I are starting a podcast. What should we call it?
Hey, don't pick on me. You know why? Because this is why. Let's see what he says.
The Joe Show?
Give Joe the business?
That's right.
Cup of Joe.
Cup of Joe.
What is happening here?
Would you listen?
We'll give you a chance.
Thank you. That's Joe.
That's Rooster.
And this is the Together We Shall podcast, episode 41. How are you, sir?
I am good. How are you?
Man, it has been a ride since the last time we chatted. Been traveling a couple of states, got kids in other countries. Man, it's a wow. What a whirlwind. Welcome to fall.
Right. Yeah. Officially fall. So, yeah, kids in other countries, kids in the military, all from 40 to 41.
I know, right? Crazy. And people might be like, man, y'all took a couple weeks off. Yeah, I kind of needed to. Had a couple things going on. So yeah, Briley arrived safely in the champagne capital of the world, Reims, France. So she got there like literally yesterday or the day before and is situated and is getting ready to start teaching American culture and English to the French kids, which is fun. And of course, Camden has successfully accomplished boot camp and is a United States Coast Guardsman currently. Learning how to drive the boats up the road in Yorktown, Virginia. Wow. What a whirlwind. How about you, Joe? What are you up to?
Yeah, you know, dotting I's and crossing T's with Owen, learning how to ride. So we're a few years away from him going to another country or the military. However, though, both boys have, you know, had their birthdays since I think we chatted last. And someone, I think it was my aunt, gave them a Target gift card. You know, it's perfect. They get to go in there and pick what they want. So, like, on two separate occasions, I took each boy in just, I mean, every aisle of Target, which was cool for me because I got some stuff, too. But, like, even they wanted to see, like, the coffee pots. I'm like, the toys and the sports stuff are back here. Like, Weston wanted an umbrella. But Owen got a Coast Guard set. It's whatever the rescue helicopter, and it's got the string to lower the basket and everything. Cause he's like all, you know, inspired and excited. I showed him the clips that I had from Camden's graduation and everything you posted. So he's all excited, which is great. Cause you know, nothing like two Marines wanting their kids to join the Coast Guard.
I know, right? We could do a whole episode on that. In fact, we kind of did with Camden's episode 38, but yeah. It was as promised, man, going up there and watching that graduation and seeing, you know, how the Coast Guard does stuff. And there's so many similarities between what we learned at MCRD and Paris Island, and the whole processes are so similar. And it's neat to see kind of how they're different, but how they are similar. And then, of course, unbeknownst to me, he somehow figured out a way to not salute a single person during all of his training. And so then I show up at boot camp wearing a
uniform. The first salute.
Like the it became the first salute, not even knowing. Oh, yeah. Man. When did you go to boot camp? What was the actual date?
September 23rd, 2003.
Damn. So you just hit 20 years, bro. 20 years. That, you know, people would never guess that because you have this youthful thing about you. They would never guess that you've went to boot camp 20 years ago.
All my peers are basically retired now, you know what I mean? They're on terminal leave, they're starting their new life, their next chapter. And I kind of did that 10 years ago when I transitioned from active duty to reserve. So there are days, like as I get invited to retirements, where I'm like, ugh, did I make the right decision? Got at least three more to go due to being promoted here soon. So we'll see where that road takes us. It's crazy to think that 20 years ago today, like boot camp was really starting, you know, because you had those few days of getting all your stuff. Like it's surreal for sure.
Okay.
I was the giggly recruit. Because I have no bearing. Stuff would happen, I would just laugh.
No, for sure. Speaking of laughter, we have those that are watching can see just off the screen there our guests that we're excited to have this week. Already the laughing and the giggling has started. So I think without further ado, we should get them in here because people are tuning in to hear their story, not our reminiscing of days past. So without further ado, Donald and Michael Harms, welcome to the show.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, happy to be here.
We always start off with the straight up question, like, where are you physically located, and why do you think that you are on the Together We Shall podcast?
We are physically located in Manassas, Virginia. We've lived for a long time now, and I'm on here maybe to talk running, and we love, you know, Ainsley's Angels, that's for sure, because they, you know, they made that possible for us. But other than that, don't know.
So did Donald bring his device? Is he going to be able to bless us with his voice today? Or has he got anything he wants to say about why he thinks he's on the show?
Not his device, no. The two Bluetooth switches. So he uses his foot to activate it, because that's what he has the most control over, is his left leg. And the two switches that he uses are both, of course, broken. So we're waiting for new ones to come in the mail. But it's also a bit of a cumbersome device. If he had it, you wouldn't even see him, really, because it would just cover his entire face pretty much. He's got plenty, that's for sure, I'm sure.
Oh, I was going to say, like, those that know Donald and those that don't know here soon, by that smile that's going to come out eventually. There it is. He's trying to hide it. He's trying to be tough. Like, no, I'm not going to smile. He's got plenty to say.
Oh, no doubt. Yes.
Well, it's fun to have y'all. This is going to be good. Episode 41 of this journey. And I don't know why it took us 40 episodes to get to you. But we're excited. We're going to see you later this month at the end of October here for Marine Corps Marathon. I thought maybe that'd be a good place to start. How's your training going? And are y'all ready? I think this is going to be like what number?
This is Marine Corps. That'll be number 5.
Nice.
Yeah, when we are super stoked to be back. The last one was
the rainy one, right? 2019?
No, we did not run that one, actually.
It's been later than that. Wow. So 2018.
18 was the last one, yeah, because we did 14, 15. Then Hope was due with Ethan, like, race day, so we didn't do 16. And then, 17, 18. And then we haven't done it since, because we took a couple years. We did Richmond, and then COVID hit, and yeah.
Man, so you mentioned Hope and Ethan. Who are they for our listeners or watchers?
So Hope is my amazing, beautiful bride and Donald's mom, and then Ethan is his 6-year-old brother, and then he's got Oliver, 8-year-old brother, and then Luke, who's 4 years old, another brother.
So a family of six living in Manassas.
Six
and
in Manassas.
And y'all, you all get a chance to go out and run together regularly. You have a chair at the house. Y'all go do some training. How's all that work?
Yeah. So Donald and I don't train nearly as much together anymore. His schedule's crazy. He's just got so many activities going on. When we first started, we trained together all the time, because running was the first activity in sport that we found that he could, you know, was inclusive enough to get him involved in. And, you know, Ainsley's Angels, of course, helped make that possible. We still will make sure we get in like a few long runs together in the final lead up to a big marathon, whenever we're gearing up for a big race. And then as far as having a chair, we got a badass chair.
That was kind of a loaded question. I'm well aware of the chairs you have.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah.
That thing is awesome, and it's still awesome. We got a blade. That thing just still rolls great and is super fast, and we love it. Yeah.
Your first chair that you said Ainsley Angels helped you with was what, 20, almost like 10 years, 8 years ago?
It was 2014, so 9 years ago. Yeah.
I mean, that had to have been within our first, what, Rooster, 20 chair grants probably? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely early on in the process. In fact, that was the first time that we were actually was in a situation where I was like, man, we ought to give them a chair. And then going through that whole process in my head of like, okay, how can I make that happen? Hey, Michelle Smith, you have a chair sitting over there. Can I borrow it? In fact, can I have it? In fact, can I have it for just a moment? Because I'm going to give it to somebody else. Because they had won the whole race in Percival, Virginia. So it was like, what can we give him for an award? A certificate to welcome to Moe's? No, Donald doesn't want that. Let's give him a running chair, you know?
That's wild. No, I didn't realize now I'm listening to a couple episodes and hearing some more of the history of the organization stuff. Yeah, I didn't realize, like, I didn't put two and two together that, like, yeah, that would have been super early on. And I didn't realize it was so last minute because, yeah, we were definitely surprised at that. Because if you remember, we came with we just were using like a stroller, like, for Donald. That was way too small. That's what we had done all of our first races in. And then we found out about Ainsley's Angels. We're like, oh, this is cool. Like, let's go run this race. This group, like, does this. And then when we got there, we were going to use the stroller. But you're like, you guys want to borrow a chair? So, we were like, of course. And then going from the stroller to that was like, yeah, I mean, it was night and day. It was like the thing was pushing itself.
That's funny because y'all aren't the slowest duo in America. I mean, give us some perspective here. I need you to drop humiliated at the door for a second. Like, y'all move pretty fast. So what is your half marathon, 5K marathon time, generally speaking?
All right. So 5K, we just ran our PR in July. Somehow we're still PRing, which is awesome. And all this guy, because he doesn't want us to let up. He doesn't let me slow down. 17:26 in July. Half marathon time is tricky. We just ran a 1:26 actually just last month. But in Marine Corps half, we were flying. But we were part of the group. We were in literally the top 15 overall in the race. And we were in the group that got
got lost.
Yeah, like, well, they
good job, Donald. Well, lead the way. Come on, man.
One of the course people told us all to go the wrong way, all of us in the top 15. So we got shorted a tiny bit. So we ended up at 1:23. I think if you add in the time and from the distance of it, we would have been around 1:25 flat, probably.
And that's not a flat course for
So that would have been our PR, which was awesome. That's why we were kind of bummed that it happened because, yeah, that course is tough. Those hills, as you guys know, at the end are brutal. There's a great video that they captured, actually. We happen to find it because they had someone just kind of with a camera just videoing people were coming by. And no one's there cheering, you know. So, like, a lot of times nobody except me really gets to see – and people racing, I guess, gets to see Donald mid-race. But I found this clip, and I was like, oh, sweet. You know, I get to show hope, especially in other people. But – it's us coming around the corner, starting Hospital Hill. And I always try to explain to people, like, how much he's doing in the race, too. Like, it's not, you know, like, we would not be as fast. I've run a few races solo because of things going on. Like there's a race at my work sometimes, and it's in the middle of the workday. But I go all out. But every PR at every distance is with him, you know. Like, we truly are faster together. But this, you can see it. We come around the corner, no one's there, no one's cheering, there's no one there, like, but you can just faintly hear, you can see Donald moving his mouth, and you can just faintly hear, as soon as we hit the corner, and, you know, and hit the hill, he just starts going, go, 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 which is him saying, go, go, like, I mean, and just, how do you slow down, you know, with that, like, it just is immediate, like, boost, like, all right, dig deep, let's do this.
There's a clip from Marine Corps Marathon 2014, you listen to episode 40, where myself, Leanne, my wife, and Laura, Ainsley's physical therapist, pushed Ainsley and Michael. And it's you and Donald are coming out of Rock Creek and Roosters on like the overpass.
Yeah.
And you guys are just flying and you're like fist bumping. Like, that clip is in a lot of videos, actually. And that's a pretty sweet one of you. Yeah, because Donald's just ready to roll.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah, you got a great picture from now on, Rooster, actually, from up on the bridge. And, yeah, like, you know, you can see Donald, like, yelling, like, just, you know, fully all in. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had the opportunity to be on the sidelines a few times for y'all's races. And every time I got to leave the starting line and fly to somewhere on the course in order to catch y'all as you're flying around there. So really fun. And it's stoked to have y'all back after a little hiatus there for your fifth Marine Corps Marathon coming up the end of this month. And that's going to put y'all both in the Runners Club, which is pretty awesome. So almost welcome to the Runners Club.
Thank you. Excited about that. Yeah, we didn't even like realize that until someone pointed out and we're like, what? Like, really? It's awesome.
Yeah. It's really special. The Marine Corps Marathon's been really good to the inclusive world in the sense that, you know, for years, if you ran five, you were into the Runners Club and you received a certificate and guaranteed entry in future races. Well, we had quite a few runners who are assisted athletes who were not getting that recognition, and they immediately leaned into it and did some research. Joe was able to help them quite a bit, and Ainsley became the first member of the Runners Club who uses a chair to get around. So very, very special program for me as her dad, and stoked to welcome both of you here in about 30 days to that club. So exciting stuff.
That's really awesome. Neat. I didn't know that.
That was also Dick and Rick's PR. So maybe you and Donald will PR here. Sub three with Sean.
That's a eventual goal. We think sub three is possible. Our PR right now is 3:07:30. So we'd like to just get under that. Technically, we've never actually qualified for Boston because it was 3:05 when we hit that because they use my age group, right? Now it's 3:10 because it just turned 40 recently. So we think, you know, we can at least qualify for Boston. So, but eventually, we think it's possible on the right day, the right conditions to go under three. But we'll see.
Yeah. Well, we'll be cheering you on, and I'll be gladly finding you somewhere on that sideline. I gotta have to really move to get to a spot to see y'all. So that's fun. I appreciate our opportunity to kind of talk about running, but I'd really, really want to go back in time a bit. I think the story of how your family became a family is fascinating. And the story's been told in a couple different formats before, but I've never had an honor to be front row for it. So if you'd let me, I'd like to have you take us back to how you met your beautiful bride and how that led to eventually finding Donald and expanding your family since then. So the microphone's yours, man. Tell us a story.
Okay, sure. Yeah. So I met Hope in high school. It was my junior year, her sophomore year. I knew right away as soon as I saw her, like, oh, this girl's special, and I need to get to know her. But I was actually like in the middle of wrestling season and like super obsessively focused, and so was like, all right, after the wrestling season, we'll pursue this. But right now, I was really focused on winning a state title in wrestling and stuff. So
I do have to ask wrestling. So what weight class were you in?
90.
I was 103 my freshman year, but junior year I was 112.
Oh my God. Okay. I'm sorry.
I'll go into the season though at like 130. I just would.
No, that's just, I'm a big man. I was 155 in the eighth grade. And so I'm just like, dude, wow. Okay. I'm sorry. I totally derailed your story.
But this is where the rabbit holes and thoroughfares. Did you win that state title?
I did. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Miller's Time, Michael won his freshman year wrestling match. Okay, he won. Either way, he won, and it's Miller Time. So before we continue the story, we invite everybody to get their favorite beverage and take a sip of it. Donald, if you need something to sip on, you need to just kick the old man. What are you drinking? You got a Marine Corps cup? What is that?
He's all in Marine Corps, man. That's his favorite branch of the military, by the way. I don't know if you guys know.
Oh, yeah, we're connected on Instagram. I get to see all the good Donald posts.
Yeah. He's drinking some Gatorade, getting hydrated up here. He's going to be going to play soccer later on. So,
yeah, outstanding. All right, well, sip it up. What are you sipping on, Joe?
I have a cup of Joe.
Perfect. I changed gears, dude. I'm using Rockstar, which is an energy drink founded in like 2001. There's no sugar in it, so stop judging me. And but I did some research about like the origins of this, and there are some listeners who probably will not approve of me drinking Rockstar today. So I also brought my my water. So I'll just kind of go there. People are like, wait, what? I'm doing research. Joe's like, I want to Google it. What is he talking about?
I do.
Anyway,
I do.
Miller Time's a fun time. This is when we invite everybody to just, you know, get a beverage and relax a little bit and listen to Michael Harm's story time. All right, back to you, Michael.
Yeah. So, yeah, right after that state tournament, we started dating, and we've been together since. That was 2000, so we've been together 23 years, married 16. So we got married in 2007. And then we were both teachers. So that gave us summers to just travel. We'd been on tons of crazy, awesome adventures. And then in 2009, we decided to hike the Appalachian Trail. We, because of teaching, we had to do it in two sections. So we did the first half in 2009 and then came back to the school year, the 2009-2010 school year. And we were like, okay, at the end of this school year, finish the Appalachian Trail. We had the second half to do. And then let's do some international travel, like just for a while. So we were, because we were going to do the trail and all that, we're living in a friend's basement. All of our stuff is like, you know, well, we didn't have that much stuff, but what we did have was like sitting in other friends' basements all throughout Northern Virginia. We resigned from our jobs. And we're like, all right, we're going to finish the Appalachian Trail. And then we're going to do some international travel for about 2 to 3 years. We thought we had saved up enough for that. Well, in between there on spring break, a friend asked us to go on a trip to Jamaica to work at a home for kids with disabilities. And I was a special ed teacher. Hope is a special ed teacher at the time. She was. We went, fell in love with the place, but especially and all of the children, the staff, everyone. But there was an immediate connection that was far deeper, unexplainable, didn't even understand it at the time, with Donald, for both Hope and I. So that was when we first met, spring 2010. We actually, because we were there to like work, they have these different cottages. Hope and I were separated the whole day working, and it was long days. You know, just working on care, providing caregiving for the kids, trying to do educational stuff with them and stuff too. But I was in sort of the bigger boys' cottage helping with them. Hope was in another cottage. So we actually met Donald separately, independent of each other. Didn't talk about him. It was very like emotional, all the work. And you come home, you come back to the place we're staying at exhausted. We would just basically crash every day. Never talked about him. Never didn't even know that the other one necessarily. At some point we had picked up that we had both met him, but didn't talk about it until the night before the last day. We're getting in bed and we're in bed and Hope just starts crying. I can tell silently, like those silent tears, but you can tell, you know, her body's sort of rocking from crying. And I knew right away what it was. I don't know how. Like I said, we had not spoken his name yet. But I knew what it was. And I still asked her, you know, what's wrong? And she just in tears just said, I just love him. And I started to cry. And I said, I know. I love him too. Which is nuts. We'd known him for, I think, 3 days. So the next day, the last day, we went up there, hung out with him a bunch together, you know, could feel and sense the connection was pretty mutual. Came back, was like, what is going on? What does this mean? Trying to figure out, you know, like, you know, like, should we consider adoption? Is this that what this is? Like, but you know, this is, that's crazy. Like, we just resigned from our jobs. We're living in a basement. Like, we're like, this doesn't make any sense. And we just met him. Like, we don't know how to care for, you know, we don't know anybody with cerebral palsy. And, you know, like, it was just a lot. So we're trying to figure all that. We're like, okay, well, we've already resigned. We got everything in motion for that. So let's finish the Appalachian Trail. Cause that was, you know, really important to us. And we're like, and it'll give us a bunch of time to really think, pray, reflect on this, but we'll go to Jamaica. We'll go back to Jamaica right before meet, hang out with Donald again. Cause the other thing too, is like Donald was older. Donald was at that point, 13, 12, something like that. Yeah. 12 or 13. We didn't know that actually. We thought he was like 8. He was so small, but, yeah, he's around 12 or 13. And, so we're like, you know, he's got to be on board with this too. Like, you know, this is a huge change for him. So we went back and hung out with him again. It was clearly like, this is not just a feeling. This is something deep. This is, you know, unexplainable. And it felt mutual. But then the real big indication that was helpful for Hope and I was at the end of the trip, we're saying goodbye to Donald. And we would say that every night. We'd say, hey, we're goodbye. We'll be back tomorrow. But this was the last day. So we're like, hey, Donald, we're leaving. But we're not going to be up here tomorrow. It's going to be like last time. We are planning on coming back, but it's going to be like last time. It's going to be a few months. And all of a sudden, I don't know if you remember this, but he just starts silent tears just start streaming down. He just starts crying and he kicks himself over in bed. And we're like, oh man, like we totally hurt his feelings. And but the crazy thing was the way the workers reacted. They were all just astonished. They're like, in Donald being here for like 7 years in the home, like, I've never seen him cry. I've never seen him. He's so tough. He'd get hurt, doesn't cry. He's just the toughest dude ever. They're like, you remember that? Yeah. You remember it? Yeah. Yeah. And so for Hope and I, it was like, oh man, okay, this is a real mutual connection. So we did leave. We hiked the whole Appalachian Trail. That gave us 3 months in the woods to just talk, think, reflect, pray. And at the end of that, we're like, all right, if Donald is on board, we want to pursue adoption. So we immediately, when we got down the trail, went back to Jamaica, talked with him, explained it to him as best we could. As you know, you can kind of hear, and if you see the video, Donald is technically nonverbal, but super communicative and understands. His receptive language is super high. So explained it to him, tried to explain, like, it means leaving this country. It means, you know, everything as best we could. But would that be something you would be interested in? You know, and he was immediately like, his big grin, like, yeah. Like, it was just clear as day, which just, that was it. That sealed the deal. We're like, all right. So we started the paperwork then in the fall of 2010. It took 3 years, two and a half years, I guess, technically. It's a long process, you know. Donald's age was a factor. We were denied numerous times on the immigration side, the U.S. immigration side of things. But we kept persevering, kept finding ways. And then in 2013, in spring 2013, finally brought him home. So yeah, that was April 2013, right? Got him home. And then once we got him home, oh, but in between there too, of course, Hope and I got jobs, got a place to live again. Like, you can't, they don't really approve of an adoption if you have no place to live, no income. So we did. Oh, that's a whole nother story, man. The way it was miraculous. The way that even came about, we literally were able to slide right back into our jobs that we left. Like, it was unbelievable. It was as if we never left, found a perfect house right near where we lived before, one level. It was amazing. All in one day of deciding, like, all right, we're doing this.
You can't help but, like, for a second, you know, think that all that stuff's like connected and aligned, and this whole resignation and traveling the trail and meeting Donald, like all of that stuff happened. And until you all decided, hey, we're going to adopt and we're going to bring him to America and we're going to raise him like our own, nothing lined up until you made that decision. It's almost like, I mean, call it what you want. I mean, but wow, that's just neat to put it in a perspective.
Oh yeah, we believe in God, and that's where we put our faith, and we've just trusted that it would work out. We made the decision to, like, because it was scary, you know, but we've made the conscious decision, like, we're not going to let fear dictate how we make our choices. We're gonna choose love instead, to be like the foundation for whatever choices we make in life, and it's worked out obviously beautifully. But yeah, so got him home in 2013, and then we're like, well, I guess we're having kids now. So we're like, let's get started. So then, and she got pregnant in February 2014. So it was like, you know, like after a few months of like getting acclimated with Donald, when we decided to start having kids, and Oliver was born in November 2014. Ethan was then born in November 2016, and then Luke came along in February 2019.
I appreciate you pointing that out, because I think I thought I heard or believed that the whole reason y'all sought adoption had more to do with infertility and these types of things, which that couldn't, I guess, be further from the truth after the story you just told.
It's funny. We eventually picked up on that from a lot of people that, oh, I guess most people are assuming that because we had biological after adopted. Because, yeah, we'll get like, you know, oftentimes when we tell people that, you know, the story, or like at least like, oh yeah, Donald in 2013 and then we had Oliver in 2014. Like, isn't that amazing? When you stop trying, it just happens. We're like, oh no, we had never tried yet. It's like, once we tried, it was thankfully, you know, we were very blessed in that regard. Yeah, like we were able, there was no infertility issues or anything like that. We just happened to meet Donald first. And the really cool thing about it is, like I said before, like when we met Donald, So I'm a logical, like, type of guy. Like, I, you know, I push emotions and feelings to the side and I get the task done. You know, that's how I approach my running, everything. Like I've literally internally had conversations in my head, like, right, with like, I don't feel like going for a run. And then literally internally, immediately, it's like subconsciously my brain is like, doesn't matter how you feel. Like, you just, you got to go, you got a job to do. Like, so like when meeting Donald and experiencing this feeling, it was very like disconcerting to me. And like, I can't base this massive decision just on a feeling, like, but it was obviously, it was so much more than a feeling. It was so deep, but it was foreign until the birth of Oliver. And that's when I realized, like, oh, that's what that was, meeting Donald, that it was that feeling, like, experience of meeting your child in the flesh for the first time.
Bro, that's some heavy stuff, bro. Man. Like, I just got full chills, man. That's that. Wow. I saw Joe's reaction too. Like, that is.
It's in it. Yeah, man. Like, I have some friends that are our age, you know, older, that are just now like starting the process of having children. And so I'm like, it's a different feeling, man. Like the birth, I said, then basically all hell will break loose. But that birth and that first interaction is so special. But to see and hear that you two met Donald and fell in love with him, like everyone does, that smile is absolutely contagious. But separately, that's the cherry on top of the story, really. I mean, that's and then to, like, I mean, we always say, you know, shout out to all the caretakers out there, like, to be, you know, whatever you guys were, 20, late 20s at the time, and say, we're going to adopt a foreign special needs kid, is, I mean, that, like you said, like, your belief and faith and all that shows just how awesome of human beings you and Hope are.
Joe, I agree with you. It also kind of reinforces the power of this feeling that they felt, like, so much that they're going to, again, unemployed, living in a basement, traveling, you know, as nomads across the Appalachian Trail, and they're going to adopt. Like, that's powerful.
Super powerful to experience that feeling outside of, like, I don't want to say something you helped create, but that's like, I genuinely do have goosebumps right now. That's strong, man. Yeah. Like,
I mean, and that's how it was. That's why, you know, like, sometimes too, afterwards people say, oh yeah, like, wow, how kind of you guys, you guys are amazing. It's like, no, like, it was a selfish choice. Like, imagine your child is, you're separated from your child, you'll get them home, you'll do whatever you got to do to get them home. It wasn't like, let's do this kind thing for Donald. It was like, I need to live with him and take and make sure he is taken care of and be and just be with him. He's awesome, like you guys met, no, and be a part of his life, and he's willing to let me be his dad. There was no charitable act. This was somehow, that's our son, we got to get him home, like, and to take care of him.
So Donald, what, I don't know if I've ever asked you this, what did you feel like going from a warm tropical climate to someplace that now snows? Were you a little worried about that?
He said Yeah.
Gloves and beanies and all. I've seen you at races before, bundled up. And he's like,
the thing is, you jumped right in though. I mean, the first snow, he was super excited to get outside, and he's so tough. Like, I'm the one that's like, God, it's too cold to run today. You know, he's like, you better throw on that extra layer, Dad, and get out there. Like we're going. Like, throw another blanket on me. Let's roll. Like.
That's cool. Good question on that one, Joe. I tell you, I bet you y'all get a lot of questions, and I appreciate you kind of to walking the dog through this idea of like, yeah, no, it wasn't infertility, and no, this wasn't a charitable act. Are there any other questions that are commonly asked when people meet you or see you and have the courage to ask? And if there are, I'd love to hear a couple, and then I have one of my own. So, okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, we'll get standard questions. I think you guys have talked about this in another episode, which I loved. Someone, I forget who, was like, maybe it was you, we were just talking about, like, you just loving when people do, instead of just stare, come up and ask, like, talk to us, like, you know, and we'll do the same thing, like, when we do catch that, like, oh, this is Donald, you can say hi. So, you know, we get the standard questions of sometimes, like, what's wrong with him, you know, or things like that, and we always, it's like, nothing's wrong with him, he has you know, cerebral palsy, spastic quadriplegic, so it affects all four of his limbs. He understands, right? You know, we get.
I love his response when you're like, nothing's wrong with him, and he just lit up. Donald, you're just like, bro, ain't nothing wrong with me. What's wrong with you?
Person that's like, do you remember this story? We had one person. She will remain nameless because she might be the friend of the mom of a good friend of mine. But and like, you know, I love her, but she's like, when she first met Donald, she loves Donald. She's awesome. But she had never been around someone with this level of, like, you know, disability, I guess. And she's like, right in his face, like, hi, Don. There's yelling. And she's like, can he hear me? And we're like, he has CP. He's not deaf. Like, yeah, his hearing's fine. Like, and Donald's just dying laughing. Like,
this is the old aunt from, like, the 70s, you know, coming up, pinching your cheeks. How are you today? Here's a quarter.
Yeah, but still, like, I, you know, even that though, like, we appreciate it, like, because she was not afraid to go right up and start talking. Like, I love it, you know, ultimately. But yeah, like, so we get typically that, honestly, around here, the bigger question I get is, oh, are you're Donald's dad, right? Because this dude's like a celebrity, you know, around here. So he knows more people than I do. He's got more friends and whatnot. So that's probably the bigger one that I get, you know. And then questions like, oh, it's so nice of you to, like, help him, because they just think maybe I'm like his caregiver or something, or like an attendant or something like that. So then explaining that, no, this is my son, you know.
Outside of you and Donald, that's such a hard space to navigate that I'm learning now as a parent, right? I mean, I've been you know, blessed to be around, you know, the special needs community now for over a decade, and learn from caretakers like you two, and then, you know, thousands we have within the organization. But as Owen and Weston are growing and maturing, they're noticing that there are differently abled people in the world. And there's a kid who works at our local bowling alley who's got Downs, does it, like, pull up the bumpers, you know, they give him the little hook, and he loves it. So, like, I was talking to him the other day when we went bowling, and obviously he sounds a little bit different and looks a little bit different to certain people. And Weston was like, right away, why does he talk like that? I'm like, talk like what? He sounds normal to me. And, like, trying to explain, like, for a 4 and a 6 year old, that is, like, I don't know how to do it. So I don't know if I'm really asking like that, but I'm just letting you guys know, like, that it's a tough space to navigate. I mean, and I'm glad to hear that you, Michael, are doing the same thing. Like, just come talk to him. Cause, like, I have early on in the years of knowing Rooster, like, had some awkward, like, the guy in the back where we'd be at a store, and he'd be like, hey, this is Ainsley, come say hello. And I'm like, oh, God, he's just yelling at people. Because he could see that they were like, you know, she's in a big, either motorized chair, you know, or her everyday chair, or, like, at points later years when she was in her signature. You know, trying to get that thing into, you know, a Taco Bell or something, like, wasn't always the easiest task. And people are looking. And he'd be like, hello, everyone, this is Ainsley. And I'm like, oh, man. And, like, just seeing that even 10 plus years later, like, trying to do that for a 4 and a 6 year old is extremely hard. But I'm thankful to know, like, likes of you individuals and how to, like, navigate that now. It's just, it's tough. But I'm glad that they're able to experience that at a young age, because I never saw anyone with special needs at 6 or 4 years old. You know, I mean, maybe, but obviously I don't remember it. But I know for sure, like, my parents didn't explain that to me. I truly believe in my mind, maybe I missed a few years, that, like, Ainsley was the first person with special needs that, like, I ever, like, definitely ever met, maybe even, like, saw. Sounds crazy to say that, but I mean, I've said it a few times on here. I just don't, maybe I missed a few years, like, blacked out, you know, or something. But
so,
yeah.
So the likelihood of you missing a few years is very, very high. But no pun intended there, but there's definitely a lot to be said to, like, the world has changed. I think people are becoming much more comfortable coming out into the world and being present. For years growing up in the 70s, like, there was a lot of hushing and a lot of let's put those people behind closed doors type of approach to things. And if anything, we've evolved as a humankind and are becoming much more welcoming, and things like ADA in 1990, American with Disabilities Act, was passed. And again, 1990, like that was not long ago, right? These things are happening, and now people can feel that sense of belonging and accessibility. And with Angels Angels, we're just knocking on the door. Like, we got a lot of work to do still. But to hear, Joe, you say that for the first 21 years of your life, you don't remember meeting someone with a disability, like that is an eye-opening statement. But also, I'm so grateful that you're willing to share that, because some people are like, yeah, I don't know if I should say that. Does that make me weird if I don't admit to? But the fact that you're saying that, and then you jumped in with the right questions and were introduced to, I guess my point is, the world is, I think, opening up and becoming more inviting, which is a good thing, but we got a lot of work to do.
Stakunis nailed that, you know, in her episode, talking about the whole facility, whatever term, in where was it, like West Virginia or something.
And institutionalizing people. Like, but we as a country, as an entity, as a policy, would rather put people behind closed doors, lock them up, as opposed to like trying to integrate them into society.
But it is awesome, though, now how it has changed. Like, it's just more and more inviting, welcoming. And I feel like, you know, people who have the special needs or disabilities look different, talk different, are getting more and more comfortable, hopefully, being out there, being themselves, you know, and sharing, you know, themselves with the world, because they got a lot to give and a lot to share. And it you know, makes us all better. Like, I loved this, but sorry, maybe tangent, I don't know, going back to, like, I loved it in one of the previous episodes, because, man, this is every time we go anywhere, talking about getting Ainsley into, I forget what restaurant it was, but in Rooster, you're just moving tables, hey, how's it going, taking a chair, shifting it over here, like, because that's what you got to do sometimes, you know, but it's like, they're going to get in there too, though, and be included, you know, just like everyone else, and more that's getting, you know, normalized. Like, we still sometimes, when we have to do that, you know, we'll get like, what are you doing? Like, you know, but most of the time people are like, oh yeah, let me help. Like, we've had people, before I can get in front of Donald to like shift a table over, I've had, you know, people get up out of their table, come over and just move it over. They don't work there. They just are like, let's get this out of his way. Like, you know, that's awesome. You know?
Yeah. That is awesome. The question that I wanted to ask that I've been kind of storing away to see if it would have came up is, I'm a huge fan of This Is Us, the NBC show, which is a series that ran for many, many years. And I've poured a lot of emotion into watching that show. But the actor who plays the dad, his name is Milo in real life, and he's been on quite a few shows. Anybody who's ever heard of This Is Us can see where I'm going with this. Michael Harms, you look like Milo. You look like the dad, especially with your current mustache that you're sporting. And for those of you that haven't watched the show, Milo and his wife, when they were young and in the 70s living in Pittsburgh, they had triplets, and one of the three children passed during childbirth. And as a result, they felt that feeling to adopt one of the other children that was born that day. So they adopted an African-American boy to go along with their daughter and their son, who were Caucasian. And they raised all three of them like triplets, essentially. And you look like Milo. And so I'm wondering, has anybody ever approached you out there asking about This Is Us, or confusing you with anything to add to this?
No, I've never gotten that. I'll take it as a compliment, though, because I have seen like an episode or two. Well, no, maybe hoping I made it through. We made it through a few episodes. We just don't have a lot of time, you know, four kids. But it's like an appealing show, obviously, for many reasons. And I do remember seeing the thing like, oh, this dude, that's a good look. Like, this guy. So I take it as a compliment, that's for sure.
Okay, so the answer to the question is, nobody has come up to you and say, hey, are you those people from This Is Us?
No, that hasn't happened. Okay.
All right. You might need to move to Pittsburgh, I guess, and maybe it'll happen.
Okay.
But I think it was before we officially started the show, and you alluded to being busy, you know, a couple times, but we were talking about how, as a society, we're shifting. You talked about Donald has all these activities that he does, right? And for those of you that don't follow Donald on social media, follow him. He'll follow you back. But it's like, you know, like the soccer, for one thing, is just awesome. I love when I get to, like, when I'm cruising through Instagram or Facebook and see him out there playing soccer. I can see you got a couple of those flags in the background, soccer flags. But like, that's awesome that like that exists, because, again, that didn't exist in 1990 anything. You know what I mean? And just being out there and being busy and not necessarily being busy with, you know, PT or something like that, but like being busy in the community and sports and, you know, academics or whatever it may be is awesome to hear that he's doing that and that those options are available.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. That, yeah, Donald plays, if you haven't seen him on Instagram or Facebook or whatever, he plays wheelchair soccer. And it is awesome because it's a sport. Truly, he does, you know, for that one, he does independently. I mean, he's on a team and stuff and he has a coach. And I help coach too, actually. But out on the court, it's just, you know, him in his chair, just playing, you know, with his team. And it's awesome. He actually practice starts up on Saturday for the next season. He's super stoked for that. Mm-hmm. Finding that sport was awesome. In high school, he was on his cheerleading team. None of the sports really were easily accessible in school because he went to Osborne Park High School, just a normal, you know, school here in Manassas. But he could be part of the cheerleading team because someone got the idea of starting, you know, an inclusive cheerleading team. He was legit good. Like they would do choreographed stuff, like, and he was, and some other, you know, people with special needs from his school too, and they were good, like solid good. And you know, Donald, like, he's so enthusiastic and cheerful, like he's gonna get you fired up for like a football game or a basketball game or something. And so he actually legitimately got, not like oh, as part of the inclusive category, Donald gets this award. He got legitimate all district cheer team, like first team, like, yeah, like, so that was cool. He's graduated high school now.
If I didn't know any better, I feel like as you started to talk about cheer, Donald, are you over there cheering, bro? Are you showing us some of your stuff? Yeah. I could hear him. What else, Donald? Donald, what else you want to talk about, man? We talked about, you know, upbringing, coming to America, becoming a cheerleader, doing running, potentially qualifying for Boston Marathon later this month. Oh, yeah, that brought a big smile.
Mm-hmm. When you get your devices fixed, Donald, you got to, like, let us know if you had any questions or have any questions. We'll sit down for a few minutes in October.
That sounds good.
I like that Donald and I are wearing the same shirt unintentionally.
Yeah.
That is pretty cool, man. Like the exact same shirt.
This is our first ones.
What's on the back, Joe? Is Ainsley on the back?
Oh, man. Well, it might not be the same. So that.
Okay. Okay.
No, dude, that's the same one. That's what he's got on.
The same shirt. How about that?
Yeah.
Wow. Y'all sure y'all ain't just planning this out on Instagram DMs? Mm-hmm.
Mm-mm. I wouldn't have seen the text for like another week or two at least.
That's what I heard. Everything had to be coordinated through Hope in order to make this happen.
Man, I'm horrible at all things. Like I eventually just got off like social media because it was like I'm not doing anything on this, but sometimes people still do. So like they'd be like, I messaged you like a month ago. I was like, I haven't logged into that account in like 3 years, man. but then even like my texts, I just don't look at them all day long. And then, so when I get home, there's like 15 waiting. I'm like, I'll check it, you know, once I get home, and then I get home with kids and
How many red dots are on your phone? You have an iPhone?
Yeah.
How many red like numbers, you know, when you get like the.
It's out of control. My kids say like, Dad, like you've got like the emails are ridiculous. It's like, you know, 10,000 or whatever the maximum limit is, I guess. Voicemails are like, I don't even know how many, man. It's bad. It's really bad.
You're like, you should just set up like automatic replies in your voicemail. Should be like, if this is serious, just contact Hope.
Yeah. That's right. I do eventually get to them. I do eventually. Like, but it's like, you know, or what will happen too. The biggest thing that's for me is I will look at it, be in the middle of a reply, and then, you know, Luke, my 4-year-old, drops, you know, a gallon of milk on the floor. Like, oh, you know, and I'm scrambling. And then I forget to ever look back again, you know, to my phone. Like, by the time I do, I've long forgotten that, oh, yeah, I was in the middle of a text. Whoops.
Well, it sounds like your priorities are aligned. So we'll just give you that. I
give myself some grace there. It's like, it's just, yeah, exactly. Thank you, Mr.
Yes, give yourself some grace. We had an episode about that.
I'd like to give some appreciation to one, just the sport of running and the running community and it, for being so welcoming, and you all though for making it actually physically possible to get into that, because that really truly was the first activity that he got into when he got home. We were just searching and searching, and that was the first, you know, one that was like, oh, we can do this right away. And then once we got the Freedom Chair, it just really expanded it even more. We can eat, you know, even like race in it, like which Donald would like. So just extending a big thanks for that.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're most welcome. Would you say that you saw an increase in Donald's confidence as a young person when he started running and being included in these events? Confidence or maybe that sense of belonging from a father's perspective that traveled this journey with him as he came to America, a foreign place that treats people in all sorts of different ways. Can you speak to maybe what you observed as he became a runner?
Yeah, absolutely. The answer is yes, in terms of to the, like, did seeing Donald have more confidence and be more comfortable with people. And I can go into why, because Donald and I have like talked about this a lot and reflected about this a lot of like, you know, the running and what it's done for us. I think the biggest thing that it did was, you know, you see Donald, and if you haven't, if your whole life, you know, seen people, someone similar to Donald, you know, haven't been around people with special needs, people who use a power wheelchair, it can be intimidating. We understand that, like, relating to and approaching someone like that. Donald, you know, looks different because of this, the cerebral palsy. He might not be looking at you because of the CP, you know, when you're talking to him. He can't always respond back. Maybe it's unintelligible to you what he's trying to say or communicate. So we understand it can be intimidating. So I think sometimes it can be hard to for a new person meeting him to relate, maybe. But with what running gave was, I think, a very quick way for people to be able to relate. Because, you know, they see Donald, I think, at the beginning of the race, like, oh, wow, how nice. Here's a, you know, a dude pushing another guy in a stroller. But then once that race kicks off and they see him and how intense he is, yelling, go, 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 you know, and fired up and wanting to catch the next person and finishing strong, I think it's very apparent very quickly, like, oh, this dude's a racer. This dude's a runner. Like, he's an athlete. And all of a sudden, there's something you can relate to immediately. Oh, wait, instead of seeing just differences right away, you quickly are like, oh, we have something in common. We have something that connects us. And that is a massive blessing. And so all of a sudden, I feel like people are a little more comfortable coming up to him. You know, they'll put out their hand like for a fist bump, and Donald can't really get back. So they're a little more comfortable, like, oh, let me get in. Let me get in there and fist bump, you know? And so that's awesome and a big blessing. And that has helped, I'd say, you, right, Donald? Yeah, to be more comfortable also, like being around other people, trying to maybe articulate something, but knowing though that they might not understand what I'm trying to say, but I'm going to go ahead anyways. It makes him more comfortable to do that, and so that's really special, and we're really thankful for it. It's one of the reasons why like running is just really special to us.
Dude, thanks so much for that, because when it comes down to the idea of like, as individuals, we thrive when we can connect with someone else, and that connection can then create a community, and then we're off to the races, right? No pun intended. It's in everything, and we love obviously what we can do with Ainsley's Angels using endurance events as that connection point, as that intersection. But yeah, what we've realized is this has only become like the first step through the door, and that using endurance sports has now led to other connections forming, people within our Ainsley's Angels family finding other things that they have in common, and that leading, and it's this ripple, and it's so beautiful. And in fact, our leadership met earlier this year and came up with our new vision for the next, you know, 10 years and beyond: inclusion without limits. So we're not limited just to the endurance event. There's so many other things. And hearing about power soccer is cool. But I bet you if we asked you, and I'll go ahead and do it now, through power soccer and through running, what are some other connections and relationships that have been formed due to things in common that are learned just by communicating and connecting through these other events?
Well, I mean, yeah, we've found obviously just people, you know, we've met tons of amazing, beautiful people that meeting people where you have something in common and things like that, yeah, is just really special. And then we've found other, you know, activities to do, other sports and hobbies and things to get into. But the big thing really, I think, is just like you talked about, it's building this big network of people, this big community that they can then support each other. You know, we've had times where like, oh, my caregiver can't get me to the race. Like, but they can, they, now we're connected and they hit us up. Like, can you fit two chairs in your van? Yep. We can take out the front seat. Like, so let's do it. Like, you know, and so you have this support. Now you're not, you realize like you're not alone. You're not on your own, you know, and that's a huge, huge blessing and special thing.
Did you all meet John through running, or did you all meet John through, how did that relationship form? I'm curious because I'm wondering if this is an example of something that started one place and became something else.
Yeah, that's exactly how we met, was running. I think I didn't realize this until hearing him on some other podcast or something that he was telling me about. He I think got into Ainsley's Angels because he saw us at a race. Racing, it was like, wow, that's cool. Like, and just looked it up, but didn't meet us. Like, we didn't actually talk to him. He just saw us because he's up in this area. So then he like reached out to like the Fredericksburg chapter or something, started pushing. But somebody else, you know, obviously. And then we happened to be at the same race together and met, became friends. He does his primary thing solo is like ultra running, which I've gotten into and really enjoy too. And so he and I connected on that. And then, yeah, one thing led to another. We were at a point where we needed, Donald gets, attendant services, and we needed an attendant, and he reached out. And so now, yeah, he's one of Donald's attendants, like, too. And so, yeah, that's a great example, actually. I don't know why that didn't first come to mind. It's of just, like, this circuitous thing that's just beautiful that all happened because of, yeah, having this activity to that we can all connect on and get into.
I my whole body just chilled again. I mean, again, John sees you all at a race. John says, that looks neat. I run. John signs up. John pushes other people in races. John meets Donald and Michael formally. John becomes Donald's caregiver, if you will, or attendant throughout the day while Michael and Hope are at work. I mean, come on, bro.
It's nuts. It's, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's crazy, right? Like, you can't, like, if you saw so many things in Hope and I's life that Donald's like, if you saw it in a movie, you'd be like, "Yeah, that didn't happen in real life. That's not real." Like, but it, you know, it does. It does.
Strangers yesterday, friends today, family for life. I mean, that is, you know, if there's ever a great example of that, that's great. Joe, anything on your mind? Comments, questions, things before we roll towards the exit of this chat?
No. I mean, I was going to touch on like the confidence thing with the fist bumps. It's kind of funny because I ran the Marine Corps half at Camp Lejeune a couple weeks ago. Myself and the rider, Johanna, when we were surrounded by like the pack, probably around like mile eight, six or eight-ish. And then she, like, as Tim Davis would say, blossomed like a flower. Because it wasn't just me talking to her about her sparkly skirt and her favorite color being pink and wanting to eat pizza. It was now hundreds of people running by saying her name, doing the fist bumps and all that, where she just, that was it. The next half of the race was significantly more interactive, and she was so much more happy then. And that just goes to back to the running community and how awesome it really is. But I did want to say that how neat it is that, you know, Donald hails from Jamaica, but look how patriotic he is. Is this Donald's room?
Oh, yeah.
I'm curious. You know, I mean, flag, seals up there, helicopters.
Yeah, there is
Iwo Jima over here.
There's no bigger patriot than this dude here. And we've even talked about that. And a big part of it, I mean, obviously, like, he just thinks military's cool and stuff like that, too. But a big part of it, I think, is, like, he's thankful, right? Like, all these resources exist. Like, they're trying in Jamaica, and it's not like the staff where he was at wasn't trying. They're doing their best, you know, but there's just not the resources and the opportunities. They're just coming around even on the understanding of what's, you know, what's possible for people with special needs. So I think there's just a big thankfulness for what is possible and what the opportunities here coming to America gave him. So, yeah, it's patriot number one here.
I did want to share this, though, that I found, and it's kind of perfect because it's from the late, great Bob Marley. But it says, who cares about perfection? Even the moon is not perfect. It is full of craters. The sea is incredibly beautiful, but salty and dark in the depths. The sky is always infinite, but often cloudy. So everything that is beautiful isn't perfect. It's special. Therefore, everyone can be special to someone. Stop being perfect. Try to live. Try to be free and live doing what you love, not wanting to impress others. And I saw that and I was like, screen capture favorites. Damn, like read that every day type of thing. Yeah. That's be free and live. Yeah. Life's a garden. Dig it.
Yeah. No, that hits, man. Because I just have recently come to the realization. Well, it's like, you know something, but you don't have a name quite for it, you know, but I struggle with perfectionism. I just like, I have impossibly high standards for myself. And then I, you know, I'm hard on myself for not meeting them, you know? And then it'll cause me to be like all or nothing on things, you know, instead of like being like, hey, yeah, I can't do this perfectly, but I can at least do part, you know? But I just recently, like literally in the last week, heard something that like talked about the perils of perfectionism and stuff. And I was like, dang, and it was like going through, it's like, oh my, that's it. That's like what I struggle with, you know? So like, that's awesome. That's like totally fitting.
Yeah. Like, and this is the stuff that like Rooster likes talking about, you know what I mean? Like I, the other day, was told to like, you know, stop putting stuff in a box and putting it away, like pushing it aside. Cause that's what I'll do, right? I'm like, whatever is, it's bad, you know, I'm in it. We're going to just deal with it, you know, and keep going. And then I listened to a podcast. You Are Not Alone was the title. And it was, a long email from an Air Force member to this podcast guy, and he read the email on the podcast. So it was like 30 minutes. That's how long the email was. But the service member talked about all the things that had gone wrong basically in the last 10 years of his life, and then how they're getting better. But he talked about how he would put things in a box and bury them at the beach, you know, metaphorically or whatever the term is, right? And then he was like, but you know what happens? Like, over time, that beach erodes and the tide and all that stuff comes back. He was like, so putting it in the box and putting it away, you know, doesn't do you any good. And when that was said, I was running. I had to stop running and like pause, like in the middle of the neighborhood road. I was like, damn, all right. So yeah, I gotta work on that. I'll be the first one to admit same thing about perfectionism and being, you know, empathetic and all that, like, and it's, I think everything that we like talking about here, they're not like, none of it's like the overnight fix. It's not like, oh, I just got to get some super glue and tighten this down or tighten this lug nut or whatever. These are like lifelong commitments to change and being better, you know, husbands, fathers, runners, teachers, professionals, et cetera, et cetera. It's like those hints that they're always there. And between that podcast, you know, hearing you talk about perfectionism, because I struggle with that too, and then that thing, I told myself that I'm going to like try to find these things, right, and take pictures because that's easier, right, and put them in an album that I can just like scroll through throughout the day. And I have some of them, but they're all in one album, and I have 6,000 photos, but like putting in the other one, then, you know, titling it like whatever, look at this every day, you know, so I can just go through them and like remind myself to take the deep breath. Love life, it's short, you know, focus on potentially the spilled gallon of milk vice, responding to that text that may not really matter as much.
Yeah, right on, man. I feel you.
See, this is why we like to do these. It's an opportunity for us to connect and also do some internal looking. And Joe's right, I do love whenever we get into these type of topics, because typically, you know, the athletes that we are, the type A's that we are, like, we don't allow ourselves to take the shit out of the box. But eventually the beach does erode, and then you're in it. Then you're in a pickle. Then you're in a spot. Then it's really dark. Then you can't get out. You don't want to get out of bed. You get all these places. And so by allowing yourself to like feel this stuff, is something it took me many, many years to do. But once I finally got to a point where I was going to be comfortable with feeling the highs and feeling the lows as they happened, each day has gotten a little bit better. But I just regret that it took, you know, over 40 years to get here.
Yeah. It's a journey, you know, every day getting hopefully a little bit better than the previous.
That's stuff that can be helpful to the other guy who's listening, who's like, oh man, I'm a perfectionist, you know, and to hear Michael, you know, say, and Joe say, you know what, it's okay to not be perfect and that you do have to unpack some shit every now and again.
If one person hears this and can improve just 1%, then it was worth it.
So like, I didn't even know that you guys had this. Like, so I'm so thankful that you guys put it out there, because it was so fun to listen to. And like, because it is getting to be like, hear from other people in the community again, like, you know, that, you know, you don't necessarily get to catch up with all the time because you're so busy with life. So I've just enjoyed, like, I listened to the Michelle Smith one. Haven't talked to her in forever, so it was like cool just to hear more of her story. And then I started the one with Lori, like episode 4 or something, because you guys I listened to the most recent one with the, you know, Rock Doc and stuff. And then you guys mentioned that one. I was like, oh man, yeah, I've never had the chance to talk to Lori a ton and hear like your guys' whole story from her perspective. Like, and so that was really cool. But yeah, so I'm looking forward to just digging into the back catalog here.
Is there anything that you all would like to leave our listeners with?
Yeah, definitely. Donald and I talked beforehand about like what final kind of thought would we want to leave. And I think for he and I, at least, it would just be that, you know, life is short and life is tough, you know, no matter who you are and what challenges you face. We all have some challenges of some kind. So we just would encourage people to take the time to find something that you love to do that brings you joy. Find someone that you love to do it, you know, and do it with them. And then sit back and just relish the amazing, beautiful experiences that you'll have by doing that, you know, by choosing, again, like love, whether it be, you know, talking about loving others, but also like loving yourself, taking that time for yourself too. Just experience some beautiful, amazing things as a result of it.
You know what? I got enough.
Time. He's in charge.
We're done. This was good.
Yeah, we're done here. The structure of this building has reached its capacity.
Find your people, and if they make you feel sexy, even better.